everybody, and welcome to San Francisco Liberation Radio. On January 26, 2005, George Leonard and Michael Murphy appeared in conversation with Marjorie Weingrow, UC Berkeley. George Leonard is the author of 12 books, including Mastery, The Keys to Success in Long-Term Learning, and The Life We Are Given, which he co-authored with Michael Murphy. George was an award-winning senior editor of Look magazine for 17 years. He also holds a fifth-degree black belt in the Japanese martial art Aikido. He is one of the founders of Aikido of Tamalpais, a dojo in Mill Valley, California, where he currently teaches both Aikido and Leonard Energy Training. Michael Murphy is the co-founder of the Esalen Center for Theory and Practice in Big Sur, California. He's also the author of 9 books, both fiction and nonfiction, exploring extraordinary human functions. In 1992, he produced an encyclopedic work, The Future of the Body, which describes thousands of cases in which normal humans have exhibited metanormal functions. In 1991, Murphy and Leonard began the first Integral Transformative Practice Group. ITP, as it is called, is a series of daily practices designed to promote well-being and health and to enable people to realize more of their potential. They describe these practices in The Life We Are Given, a workbook for long-term practice published in 1995. Marjorie Weingrow is the chair of the Sage Scholars, an award-winning mentoring program at UC Berkeley. She organized the evening, which took place in a large utilitarian lecture hall on the university campus.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you tonight. My name is Marjorie Weingrow. I am the director of the Sage Scholars program at UC Berkeley. I'm just thrilled to have with me two friends and people that I admire, who are Michael Murphy and George Leonard, who many of you might have heard about through Esalen. And we'll talk about Esalen for those of you who are a little young and may not have heard of Esalen. And we're also going to talk about ITP. So I'd like to begin and ask George, if you could just tell us a little bit about Esalen first.
Oh my goodness. How can you explain Esalen? It's almost impossible. First of all, it's in one of the most beautiful spots in the world, right on the edge of the sea. Mike, up to you, sir.
Esalen is an educational nonprofit institute. It's been there for 43 years. We do about 500 seminars a year. You could characterize it very briefly as ways to explore more life, personal growth, personal transformation. You've heard all the cliches. In many ways, this kind of enterprise, you know, which is all around us these days, is still searching for a name. Arguably, there's not been a de Tocqueville or a sociologist to describe this whole kind of venture. In any case, about 10,000 people a year come through Esalen. That's the public side of the institute. The other side, to say it very briefly, is we do invitational conferences and promote research projects and social action projects of various kinds. We've been doing those the whole 40 years of the institute. And they range, these programs range from Soviet-American relations. We got very involved with the Soviet cultural exchanges with the Soviets in 1980. And that program really has evolved today. We're starting a new initiative dealing with the problem of religious fundamentalisms, Islamic, Jewish, Christian, Hindu, etc., working with members of the foreign policy establishment from Washington and people from Europe and people from the Middle East, and trying to get at the psychological roots of terrorism and what's behind fundamentalism. So it ranges just briefly from that to we are brokering meetings now with a community that is formed in Europe, started at the Sorbonne, on what they call esoteric studies. Anyway, so this this will go on for 5 or 6 years with this a community of scholars in Europe, meeting American scholars, and just to give a quick overview of how far afield we can go in these kinds of initiatives, we, for 7 years, have been sponsoring a group of people involved in empirical inquiry in the spirit of William James into the question, does something in us survive bodily death, postmortem survival? It's a new look at the whole James agenda that was set out by, say, 1900. But these are all people who are coming at it not in any way as a religious issue, but as a pure empirical issue. And the first book out of that series will be published this fall. So anyway, that gives a quick sketch of the kind of range of stuff that goes on at Esalen.
And if you could just talk about, Esalen became very popular in the 60s. And if you could just drop some names for those who don't know about who came to Esalen.
Well, you should know that Esalen was not founded by Orson Welles and Rita Hayworth. but Fritz Perls, Aldous Huxley, you know, Linus Pauling, Paul Tillich, Carlos Castaneda was a young graduate student when he came for the first time in 1964. And then the University of California Press published his first book in 1969. He was a friend in those years before he became popular. So it was a tremendous gathering place in the 60s. And there was a lot of music, the Beatles and Joan Baez and Simon and Garfunkel. And George, you say something, and let me...
Well, don't forget Arnold Toynbee, who at that time was on the cover of Time magazine. And the great mystery that? About it all is that these people came because Mike wrote them letters. I think he was able somehow to condense his charm into print, just one letter. And they said, yes, we'll come for $200. He was the most famous at that time, on the cover of Time when he came down there, historian in the world. He came to Esalen, paid his own way, and got $200. So there's something magical about the very beginning of Esalen. The basic idea of Esalen is really the human potential.
That's the key.
We don't need to, everybody knows about the hot tubs.
Right.
See, we gotta keep some secrets. George, how did we meet?
How did we meet? Okay, I was working for Look magazine. I worked there for 17 years, and just very briefly, Look was the most honored magazine and with the largest circulation of any big magazine in those days, 34 million readers. And I finally decided, I'd been doing a lot of education coverage, and I began to wonder, are the schools really developing and inculcating the human potential? I said, maybe not. So I turned in a story idea simply to be called The Human Potential. And another thing about Look is the writers and editors and so forth were free to go as many places as you wanted to go, to take as much time as you wanted to. And the whole time I was there in 17 years, I was never asked to change one word because of policy. Now, name a magazine like that today. It's sad, especially the young people who never had a chance to read it. Why did it go out of business? Television advertising. The advertisers off television. But anyway, I had already interviewed 37 experts on the human potential. Brain researchers, psychologists, psychiatrists, philosophers, theologians, everybody you could think of, crisscrossing the country, going back and forth for a period of 5 months. And I'd finished 10,000 words of the article. I was hoping it would be 20,000 words printed in two parts of Look. So I gave the first 10,000 words to a wonderful woman named Lois DeLatra, and we had lunch together, and she said, look, you've got to meet Mike Murphy. After reading this, she said, you've got to meet Michael Murphy. I'd heard of Esalen, a funny little place down on the Big Sur coast. So, and she said, he's coming to my house tonight for dinner, and you're coming too, and you cannot say no. I said, okay, Lois, anything you say. So I walked in there, and there was Mike in the kitchen eating cheese and crackers. Now, this was February the 2nd, 1965, after which my life has never been the same. But we started talking in the kitchen. And very shortly, have you ever had this experience when everyone else sort of faded away? Just the two of us were talking. And we talked there for several hours, and then the party finally ended. Lois had to get to bed finally. So we drifted over to my house on California Street at the time, and we continued talking, I think about 2:30, maybe 3, but it was certainly 2:30. And we decided to join forces, that Esalen had been created under the banner Human Potentialities. Aldous Huxley had that idea. So 2 weeks later, I went down and was introduced to some of the techniques of Esalen. A couple of weeks after that, Mike came up and spent a long weekend at our house, and this went on back and forth, back and forth. We just kept right on meeting with each other, and we've been doing it ever since.
Right till tonight.
That's 40 years, over 40 years. No, it'll be 40 years on the 2nd
next
of February.
Week.
That's right.
40 years next week.
That's right. 40 years next week. So that's how I met Michael Murphy.
So tell us how the two of you got together on your quest around ITP.
Well, I like to start different kinds of programs, and I had also started Aikido. He got me into Aikido, too. Then he dropped out. But the vast majority of people do not stay with Aikido. It's the most difficult of all the martial arts to learn, and Mike had other more important things to do. And
what a pal.
In Aikido, there are all sorts of things that are rather mysterious. How many people have been to one of my workshops where I do the limit energy training? Yeah, you know,
see,
things that would seem counterintuitive that just shouldn't happen. Just like Aikido is very mysterious and shouldn't happen, but does. It's very effective. So I started something called Linnet Energy Training, which was to take the principles of Aikido and use them for workshops. So in the period basically of the from 1976 till when we started ITP, I had presented this to 50,000 people throughout the United States and also Europe. And so it was good, a series of discrete exercises, but it wasn't a program of transformation. You had transformative qualities in it, and the exercises and demonstrations were quite spectacular, but it wasn't ITP. So as the 90s opened, Mike is just finishing up this magnificent work. Oh my God, I can hardly pick it up. It's so heavy. Here it is. The Future of the Body. How many people have read it and looked at it? It's like an encyclopedia. You don't read an encyclopedia page by page like this. You look at what you need to look at. This is one of the great accomplishments of our times. And this was in 1991. This was in galleys, I think. And this had just come out. And look at my puny little book. Compared to this, I mean, my God, there's no comparison. Mastery. But a lot of people seem to love this book and do things like sleep with it or carry it with them at all times. It has something, and I think the main thing it had in it is the idea of long-term practice and the fact that just the quick fix doesn't work. And that's something we learned at Esalen. Because in the early years, in the 50s and 60s, in the 60s when you started, there was the idea that you could go to one weekend and your life would be totally transformed. And it was. It lasted, a weekend lasted, as Mike had figured out, till Tuesday. And a five-day workshop generally lasted about 2 weeks. It was good. Wonderful experiences are good no matter how short they are. We began realizing that it takes long-term, patient, diligent practice, and that's the message of this little book. So I got the idea of let's start a practice, a long-term, diligent, patient practice, which will really help us somehow bring out more of this incredible human potential. In my human potential story, my coverage, and I went out and talked to these 37 people, he was number 38. None of them said that we were using more than 10% of our potential, of our true potential. They were incredibly conservative. After studying this ever since 1965, I don't think it's any question that we're using, really, most of us, about 1 or 2% of our potential. About 1 or 2% of our potential. And we could do it, but we just have the idea here, especially in America, we had the idea that everything can be done very quickly, period, just like that. But so we got the idea of starting, and I started working on it. I started trying to create a series of exercises, which we call the ITP kata, K-A-T-A, a Japanese word meaning form. It's something you go through in the same sequence at all times. And one part of it, one exercise, one part, should lead naturally and gracefully into the next. So in the September of 1991, I started practicing it and doing it with groups whenever I could, changing it around and so forth. So we then put out a call for people who would like to volunteer to be part of our experimental program. Now, to be part of this experimental program, instead of being paid like in most experiments, they had to pay us. It was $65 a month, and we had a very nice group of people. There were 33 in the first group and 30 in the second group. We did it for 2 years. And we also did a sort of a study. And then Mike and I went on to write the book, and ITP continued without us. The Life We Are Given, here it is. And then the subtitle is very important, the long-term program for realizing the potential of mind, body, heart, and soul. It's integral and it's transformative. And so this was published in 1995. And when that was published, we also have now a DVD of the kata, the series of movements. And it's spreading all around America, and also in many other places that are very strange. We get postings from places like Bulgaria or New Zealand, you know, and that's how it started. There's a lot more to say about that. But
yeah, would it be useful to say a little more about the different elements of ITP beside the kata?
I was just trying to keep moving.
Yeah, a little bit about the how you began with the early results. Could you explain about some of the problems that you encountered at the beginning and how you've evolved to what ITP is right now? And then we can go into ITP now.
Well, actually, the problems were rather small, but we did have that homeostasis thing. Any kind of self-organizing system, whether it be a tadpole, or a dog, or a human being, or a whole culture, will resist any change, whether that change be for the bad as well as for the good. So one of the big problems we had, after about 2 or 3 months, people were really beginning to get something out of it. They were seeing their life change. And then at that point, and there was generally some kind of resistance. It just followed that. There's a chapter in both of these books about homeostasis. Our editor of this book insisted we publish We steal from this book, I was plagiarizing myself here, to put that same chapter about homeostasis and the desire to stay in one system. And of course, that's a good thing. We want to keep our temperature the same, our blood pressure about the same. If it suddenly went up to 300, wouldn't be too good. Or down to 30, that wouldn't be too good. So it's a survival thing. But when you want to make a change, you're going to have to make some basic changes. And homeostasis will resist that. So anywhere between 2 months and 4 months, the group would say, well, let's bring in something new and different. That was one of the real problems we had. And groups today still have that problem.
How did you evaluate the success of the program?
Well, we did our own little bit of research. Now, more research has been done, and more will be done, some high-level research. But we did pretty good research, actually. And those results in the back of the book, in the appendix. And people really got tremendous changes out of it. And some of them were rather spectacular. We had spectacular.
How did you evaluate it?
Well, we hired Dean Ornish's statistician. Mm-hmm. And we all did it in official statistics with probabilities and so forth, and got some very good probabilities that the people who most followed the commitments which we made did better in most every aspect of their life, of their training and their practice. And maybe I should just mention the commitments that people make.
That'd be great.
Is that okay?
Good.
All right. Get my glasses. Okay, I'm going to shorten these slightly, but they will get the idea. Number one, there are 8 of these. I take full responsibility for my practice and for all transformations of my body and being that flow from it. But here's a very important second part of that number one. While respecting my teachers and fellow practitioners, I fully understand that I am the final authority. Okay, I have to say right now that we do not particularly in 21st century America feel that the guru is the best teaching model. We are anti-guru. We wanted to have multiple mentors. We wanted to avoid any kind of feeling that I am the way and the life, the only way and the only life. So we said that people are their own authority. 2, I seek to join in community with other ITP practitioners. While maintaining my individual autonomy and authority, I commit myself to my ITP community in vision and practice, etc. 3, I do the ITP kata at least 5 times. I understand that time permitting, I can lengthen any part of the kata, and that extended periods of meditation at the end of the kata and at other times of the day are recommended. And again, these all have chapter references. See chapters 6, 7, and 8. 4, I accomplish at least 2 hours of aerobic exercise every week in increments of no less than 20 minutes. 3 hours a week in increments of no less than 30 minutes are recommended. 3 sessions of strength training a week are also recommended. Okay. 5, I'm conscious of everything I eat. 6, I develop my intellectual powers by reading, writing, and discussion. I thoroughly consider the visions and teachings set forth in chapter 12, and commensurate with my own best judgment, seek to integrate cognitive understanding into my practice. Now, that's sometimes hard to get people to read, you know, anything except Google. Okay. 7, I open my heart to others in love and service. I stay current in expressing my feelings to those close to me and take care of my emotional needs in appropriate and healthy ways, seeking counsel when needed. See chapter 13. Each of these has a reference. 8, and the last one. For each 6 to 12 month period, I make at least 1 affirmation having to do with significant positive change in my own being. I also make the following affirmation. Everybody does this one. My entire being is balanced, vital, and healthy. I include my affirmations during transformative imaging in my kata and seek in appropriate and healthy ways to realize those affirmations, see chapters 4 and 5. And we did find that the people who most followed their commitments got the best results in achieving their affirmations.
So, could you talk about the Stanford study that was done about this?
You want to take that one? I don't know.
Well, you know, the results, this was a Stanford University Medical